everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show, episode number 144. We have two sponsors at the top of the show. Lynda.com. You've heard of them. You know them. Lynda. Lynda.
Lynda.com.
/ Shop Talk gets you a 7-day free trial of their enormous learning resource on the web. And 1 month Rails. Last week we talked about 1 month iOS. It's the same company. They do 30 minutes a day for 30 days. In this one, you learn all about Rails. So the URL there is onemonth.com/shoptalk. That's the one you want to go. We're going to tell you about what you learn in there, and we'll tell you more about lynda.com later in the show. But for now, let's kick things off.
Another episode of Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave Rupert, and it's been a whole entire week, and I'm still kind of sick.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
Sad.
Chris.
That's a long lasting, you know? It's kind of like, it reminds me of the movie Interstellar, where, you know, voice is the one thing that travels through time. Or no, was it gravity? Ugh, I forget. Some time distortion going on here, though.
Yeah, it feels like it. It's, Chris, it's so good to talk to you. It feels like it's just been like 10 minutes.
It really feels like mid-November to me.
Yeah.
I know. No, I know it's great. Actually December 1st, but it's just, I don't know, it's feeling November 12th-ish.
Hey, Chris, who do we have on the show today?
Nobody, because it's a rapid fire. That's right.
Bing, bow, bow,
no guests, no drama, just get all question on answer action. After this, we have three guests back to back, and then it's the holidays, and so we'll come back with season four or whatever the heck we're calling it on Shop Talk Show. But yeah, we're about to close out the year here. We'll be taking a few weeks off for Christmas. We'll remind you of that. I'm sure none of you are too devastated. You'll be so busy eating pie or whatever you do on the holidays, celebrating or something.
send us photos of you eating pie.
Please do. And your audio questions.
I think that we'll retweet it. I don't care. Just send photos of me eating pie.
If anything we tweet is a good idea at this point. Our Twitter game is pretty weak, at choptalkshow.com. But you should still follow it because we only use it for the powers of good, like telling you when there's new episodes and apparently now pie pictures.
Pie pictures. Pie, kernel standards, and episodes. That's about it.
That's all we intend to use that for. Sean writes in, I have to do a bunch of, I've had to do a bunch of horizontally scrolling sliders for work lately. These sliders always throw me for a loop because I'm working off comps that I had no part in designing. I do not know the optimal method for making these. I've had a hard time recommending changes to the designer if there's problems. Sometimes they're expected to be responsive, where the number of elements shown is always the same, you know, three across or whatever. Sometimes they need to be responsive where the height stays the same and they show a different amount of them depending on the width. So, you know, the browser window gets wider, it shows more than three or whatever. I have checked out a few tools for inspiration, but because I have to be true to the comps, I'm always having to code these out for myself. So how do I keep these sliders from freaking out when the browser window is resized and they're partially scrolled or whatever? And what's the definitive best way to make these from a performance and UX standpoint so that I can help our designers make better choices? So that's pretty broad too, but you get the point, right? So there's three boxes and there's left and right arrows and you click right and either one slides in or a whole new set of three slide in. Whatever, it's a slider, you know, or a carousel, they're often called. No, we don't have to have a whole discussion about why carousels suck. That's always where these conversations go. And maybe they do suck, and maybe you should have that conversation with your clients. You know, they do add weight to the page. There's studies that show people don't use them very much, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes, let's say you assume you've already lost that fight. You're putting a slider on the page. I do think occasionally they are useful. Now you're in this situation where you're, of course, responsive design. It's just a given these days. the browser window is 800 pixels wide and somebody drags it to 900 pixels wide. That's weird, right? Because before, when you click that right arrow, it would shift over a certain number of pixels. Let's say it shifted over the entire 800 pixels and revealed three more things there. The browser isn't 800 pixels anymore. Now it's 900 pixels. If it just shifted over 800 pixels, it would be weird and it would be in between two boxes and it would be confusing, right? I think what you need, Sean, is probably just a slider plugin that accommodates for this. Responsive is absolutely one of the features of a lot of sliders that I've seen these days. They just account for that. They just know that they need to work in a fluid width world, and thus they do.
Yeah. I was going to say owl carousel.
That's the one I was thinking of, too. It's got that feature. It's another thing it has is touch support. So those are the two things. Like, I made a slider back in the day, the Anything slider. It's a great slider. It just is out of date, and I don't even recommend it anymore necessarily because it doesn't have those two fundamental features, which is flexibility and then not only just flexibility, but it's got to rejigger itself every time that happens so that it then works again in the new world of the new size that it's at. And touch. You need to be able to swipe a carousel.
Yeah. I feel like Owl does the best. I've seen another one, Slick. It's good, but when you like put a lot of items in it, like five and start like resizing really hard, it gets pretty herky jerky, if you will.
Yeah. So, there's another one I was thinking of too. If I can think of it, I'll put it in the show notes. It's Owl like and does a pretty good job, but you can style these.
Owl's gotten a lot better actually since I last saw it.
Of course, there's no limitation to what you can do style wise. I mean, that's just CSS, you know? Like if you have to match these comps, you can match the comps with Owl. You can get it done, you know? When you go look at Owl and you look at their demos, they can be appealing. I can see how some people in the world make their choice on what slider they pick based on how nice the demo looks, but you probably shouldn't, you know? It's fairly trivial to change how a slider looks, you know? You drop in some new images for the buttons and adjust a few things with CSS or don't even use their CSS at all. Bring your own CSS. You know, there's probably some, like, core CSS that you should probably leave alone, but there's, you know, a lot of these sliders have, like, core and then the theme, and you kind of squish them together and that becomes the thing. But I guarantee you can make Owl do what you want to do. And it's not just like, well, Owl, you know, it does the thing where, you know, what if you want it to reveal more elements when the browser window gets wider? I'm sure you can. You know, there's settings to make that kind of thing happen. Or if there isn't settings, you could just kind of tear down and reinstantiate the slider when the window resizes, which even if you think that's heavy, it's probably not because of how rare users actually do that anyway. So, anyway, there's ways out of this while still using a kind of robust existing solution, I think.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, one trick I do, I mean, like, I'm kind of a fan of the Overflow X scroll thing.
Sure, because like, then you just
you display inline block, white space, no wrap, and then it's an automatic horizontal slider, totally native to the web browser.
You can even put links in there that click to scroll that area, like a
anchor
tag. Yeah, I remember an old school video by Remy Sharp back in the day that really clicked with me, and he was talking about how to build a jQuery slider, and he built one from scratch, and he did it in like 10 minutes, and that's how he based it off of a really nice semantic thing where all the links were just anchor hashtag identifiers that would scroll an overflow container like you're describing. So it worked without JavaScript. And then JavaScript, all it did was shift the scroll positioning, the X scroll positioning of the.
That's so beautiful. But yeah, so I'm like, let's get like super simple, you know, like maybe it doesn't have to be this full on app store experience kind of thing. You know, I feel like that's what's driving these kind of requests. And I mean, if you go to the app store, the like Apple iPad app store thing, that's HTML5. Like when it fails, it gives you like a 403 error.
Yeah.
And so like, it's totally possible. But I mean, those guys have like super brains on it, and it's like one guy just makes a carousel all year long, you know, and you probably don't have that luxury, but if like you're finding yourself and your designer's always giving you these carousels, man, just be like, screw you guys. I'm taking a day to find the best carousel because you keep designing them. So, or whatever, a week. Just be like, this is coming up a lot and I'm not comfortable with the solution. I'm going to find the best one and start with OWL and get real comfortable. You know, that's part of plugins too, is getting comfortable with it. So that's something.
Indeed.
That's what I would recommend. All right. Patrick Skutninski writes in. Sorry, Patrick. When it comes to responsive web design in WordPress, I find myself using a lot of modules in the WordPress page editor to organize the site's content, like div class 1/3, closing that div class 2/3, close that div. This is all well and good when I'm the one editing the site, but it makes it very difficult for clients to update the site. Is there a super easy way of doing this? Should I not be relying on so much on dynamic modules and divs? Love the show. Hope y'all are.
This comes up a lot on the show, and we even came up in the last rapid fire a little bit about, you know, how we're always nervous about putting HTML, like positional stuff like that, into a content area because it's going to bite you someday, you know? Like, mm-hmm. that class name is just not going to live there forever. Content is not the place for this kind of thing. Templates are, you know? When I see, you know, div class equals one clear, disaster equals two, I'm like, okay, Patrick, is that a type of page? This is a car page or something, and those type of pages are in this two-column layout because if that's the case, then you could be like, okay, create a custom post type for cars and make a template for that custom post type that has this HTML structure in there. And if there needs to be, you know, well, what's the content for this column and what's the content for this column, you can use custom fields to do that. And the plugin Advanced Custom Fields is phenomenal for this. You can say, okay, this type, for this custom post type, I'm going to totally redesign what the like new page screen looks like in WordPress. Everybody's seen the WordPress new page or new post. There's a title bar. There's like a URL slug changer. There's a big box where you type the content in. You can restructure that entirely with Advanced Custom Fields. You can be like, okay, this one has two content boxes because one of them's for the left column and one of them's for the right, or however you want to think of it. And there's an additional drop down thing here, and there's a calendar here. You can just totally create this whole new thing. And now there's now that it gives you the opportunity to keep the content clean. Now there's no divs and crap up in those boxes. There's just clean content, maybe perhaps markdown, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you're just, none of that presentational HTML is making its way in there. And probably you have like an editing experience that's better for clients, better for you, better data to use in the future. More structured. Mm-hmm. It just structures your database in a way. I love it.
Yeah. I was going to say maybe like, I would try to keep the HTML out of the data, like try to keep that as pure as possible. There may be something you can do with a short code, like kind of like main column short code. And then you have like end main column, and that's really
right.
It means nothing. And you just train people to do that. Like that's a training
definitely
issue.
Better than HTML. I like that idea too. Yeah. That way you're not necessarily having to make a custom post type. You just have these structural things. And then if you don't want to use those one day, well, unfortunately that short code is still up in the content database, but you can make it do something different. You can ignore it. You know, you have options there that aren't muddying up the content in there necessarily, which is cool.
Yeah, essentially you're doing art direction, right, in your post type, and that's hard to do. I would try to tackle it with metadata, like Chris is saying. You can easily like advance custom fields and drop that into a post, and it's like, you know, your content and your post sidebar, you know, and then maybe and I've done this before and it kind of failed because it made too many pages and everyone hated it. But I had a parent page like about. And then I had a sub, and the parent page just sucked in all of its children pages. And it had like the main content or image, post image, and some content. And then it had, and then the next page was like post image and some content. You can totally do that with just one page template. But it sort of failed for my client. So I don't know if I really recommend it, but You know, I think there's some options there. But I think I would try to keep it out. Unless that person knows HTML, try to keep it out of the editor.
All that's good solutions. My
final word.
Yeah. Royal Slider was the other one I was thinking of that I think is pretty nice.
I heard about that one.
Okay. Let's see. All good stuff here. We have our sponsor, lynda.com. That's lynda.com/shoptalk. Gosh, you know all about them already. They're this huge learning resource on the web. There's so much content there, tech related and just related to tech. Like anything, it's like it's computer learning of all kinds. Desktop publishing design, web development, photography, business stuff. There's so much stuff on lynda.com. What they do have that we haven't mentioned in a while is a fairly robust set of apps. So they have apps for iOS and for Android and an Amazon app even. You know, they want to, you know, they bring that their entire library and your account to those apps. You know, so you're on the web and you're like, you know what, I want to learn this a little bit later. And I just want to mark some favorites. I want to make some playlists, some things I want to listen to. You can do that on the web. You can do that on the app. And they're all just synced up together. You know, they just live kind of together. So your world of Lynda can kind of come with you on any device, which is a pretty dang nice thing, I think. But you know, the real beauty of Lynda is the robustness. Like you can find the niche thing that you want to learn is on Lynda for sure. You know, just thousands of courses. It's so wonderful.
Yep.
Lots of people use them. You know what? You're going to love it. So to get your free week at lynda.com/shoptalk, let's do another question.
Another question. This one comes from Nohan. Wanted to ask you guys, have you ever used any prototyping tools like Fireworks or Sketch? And if so, what's the best tool you've come across?
I like the way that he framed this question, because when you think of a tool like Photoshop, you don't necessarily think of it as a prototyping tool, even though, of course, that's what we're doing. We're making, and I think as Andy Clark once said, a picture of a website. There really is a prototype, but Photoshop wasn't born life as a prototyping tool. It's meant as a finishing tool in a way, or like a, you know, use this for it's the output is what you make in it. And that's kind of changed over time. I wouldn't use Fireworks. Fireworks is kind of end of life by Adobe. But I have used Sketch. I used it for the first thing today. I was like, I'm going to design this thing today and I'm going to do it in Sketch. And I did it and I liked it, and I've been working with its SVG output a little bit, and there's just a lot to like about Sketch. It has a absolute learning curve. It is weird. There's no like tools. You don't like activate a tool and then do something with that tool, and that paradigm shift has been very weird to me. You have to be like, I need text, so I'm just going to hit T and then click, and then it's going to give me text there kind of thing. But there's no like, just give me the pointer as I need to select something. And I haven't like quite figured that out yet. It's not, I mean, you can get through anything. There's like also like, you can't like option drag something to make a copy of it, which is like every app in the world can do that. And it's weird that it doesn't. Anyway, I love it though, especially its exporting abilities are amazing, as you can export the whole thing, or you can just click on one little area or selection and make that an export area and export it at 1x, 2x, 3x, and all this. The exporting in it is like phenomenally intuitive and awesome, and its SVG output is great, and it's pretty sweet. So Nohan, I definitely recommend Sketch. It's worth checking out. It's like $100, I think, but it's a one-time cost, so that's pretty good.
Yeah. No, that's good. I'm trying to think. I mean, honestly, I'm going to get real, real with you guys. This is not just because, like, Chris, you're my best bud. But this is like, I use CodePen as a prototyping tool. I use the crap out of it. My job is basically a professional code penner. And that's all I do. And so like, and Chris, you're blushing right now, but it's super good. And I feel like when you get something into code, even if it's like ugly as sin and is Times New Roman, like you can start validating your thoughts, like in code.
Heck yeah.
Across all devices instantly. And that's
going to get better too.
Well, and we should talk because I would really like it if the meta tag could be a checkbox. Anyway, good. Like, check with box. Device width.
Oh, anyway. Yeah, because that's like there's only really one that you'd ever use, so it might as well be that one.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That's anyway, a good, fine idea, sir.
Well, so my thing, I'm just like, for me, it's all about like, how can you get to like a state of playing and having fun? And I feel like on the multi-device web, that's going to be in code and you're going to have to get there. So, yeah. And that's what I'll be talking about at an event apart this fall or
spring. You're still done deal?
So there you go.
Which cities? Yeah.
Papers. I know I'm going to be in Atlanta. Oh. So you guys should come on down to Atlanta. Hotlanta. Nice.
Cool. I'm doing a few too. That's the only things I've agreed to next year. I'm going to try to focus on my shop talk. It's my primary focus.
I'll also be in, if you're up in New York land, I'll generate New York. So that's, I'm talking about this because I'm big into this idea that like you just like prototyping, it's got, you squeeze it, feel it.
I did it today with some Flexbox work. Somebody was like, this can't be done in Flexbox. I'm like, yes, it can. And also, I ended up making a nice little design pattern about it that I'm sure I will use over and over.
Isn't disproving somebody so wonderful?
Oh, gosh. I would like to say it doesn't fuel my entire existence, but it does.
You can't do that. Or even like when they're like, I don't see why you can't do that. And you're like, it is impossible. Here you go. I proved it. Or something. That's so fun. Anyway. That's my life. I live for that.
Especially when you prove it in code, it feels extra good because it like can't be disproven then because it's right there.
Yeah, or just like you're just like, I just feel, you know, like it's like two ways, right? Like somebody will start with a desktop layout, you know, and then they're just like, and then it'll squeeze down and you're like, it's not that easy or whatever. Or they'll start with a mobile layout and then it'll get super wide and it's like, it's like a barren wasteland or it's like an awkward stretch thing, you know? And so it's like somebody didn't think through all these kind of scenarios. So we got to kind of do that. So I feel like code's the best way to do that. Anyway, that's my spiel.
Yay! Jimmy Knapps writes in, I'm building a website that requires heavy use of media queries to adjust content dynamically in accordance with the size of the viewport. Yay! That's what media queries are for.
Yeah.
I have broken the individual page up into multiple parts within their HTML files, designating where different parts begin and end through use of comments. So, presumably, header, footer, main content, yada yada. Mm-hmm. I've divided my CSS style sheet in the same manner, applying the global styles, and then part one styles, part two piles, part three styles. So presumably, again, header.css, footer.css, probably. When I'm applying media queries, though, is it objectively better / more semantic to include part one's media queries in part one's style section, as the other styles are, and part two's media queries in part two's style section and stuff? So should you put all the media queries for the header near the rest of the styles for the header? Or should he say, or is it just better to just put all your media queries at the end of the style sheet, just all together or whatever? Since so much of the content modification is required, I'll either write 20 plus small media queries or combine it all together at the bottom or whatever. So he's just kind of saying, should I kind of group my media queries together with the relevant CSS or kind of put them all at the bottom or whatever? I guess the idea of this has come up before, and certainly pre-processing is going to be part of this discussion, but the idea is that you can just write one media query and put all that stuff in it, and it kind of feels nice in a way, right? You're like, okay, this is one media query. When this hits, I'm going to change all this stuff rather than writing that same media query over and over and over and over again. Right? Is that what you're getting out of this, too?
I do declare I heard a question about semantics.
CSS semantics. That's a...
So, which is better, to bundle your media queries or pepper them out?
I'm going to say pepper, Jimmy. Just pepper them out there. Because the browser doesn't care. The browser will gzip the crap out of it. The browser will parse them and do what it needs to do with them very quickly. What matters is for you. And if you want them up there, then go for it, you know? I just think that's going to be a better maintenance situation for you. And that's why it's so nice in SAS, because, or Less or Stylus, they all have the media query bubbling kind of thing, meaning that you can't in regular CSS put a media query inside of a selector, but in SAS you can, and then it moves it out to make it legal, you know? It's so nice. I mean, everybody agrees that's, you know, possibly maybe the number one nicest thing about SAS. It's like, number one, concatenates files for you. Number two, you can put media queries right within selectors, you know?
You like at the component.
Yeah, because it makes, you know, with equals 50% and with equals 100% where those change because of a media query, it puts those right next to each other, right where you cognitively need them to be. If they're thousands of lines apart or in a different file, you're going to break your brain.
Yeah. And to answer this question objectively, like Kimberly Blessing, she's been on the show. She did a talk about this called Optimizing Media Queries. And I think we saw it at CSS DevConf a long time ago, Environments for Humans Production. And she went through and like A-B tested, is it better to chunk or is it better to all in one, right? Yep. Went through, tested it. And there are performance impacts.
Is there?
I mean, you're not going to know. But
of course, it's like the star selector thing.
It's different, though. It's like you maybe have a longer render time, but maybe your paints are split farther apart. So it's like as soon as the browser has CSS and can evaluate it, it'll execute it. So if like you wait till it's at the bottom, maybe it's going to wait a really long time to figure that out or something.
Oh, really?
You
it's know? Like so, it starts doing like, stuff with the CSS before it has parsed the complete CSS document, meaning that if it needs to adjust something based on a mirror query, it'll happen earlier because it's peppered up higher. Or is it
like I'm maybe not like doing that total justice or whatever, but it's just this idea like there are gives and takes to each technique. And here's a spoiler. Can I give a spoiler? If you search for Optimizing Media Queries, Kimberly Blessing, there's a talk about it, but a slide deck. But here's the spoiler. So turn down your stop your audio if you're worried about this. So does the way we write media queries impact page performance? Answer, yes. Media query syntax and code structure have an impact on performance. Which technique yields the best performance? No particular technique stands out as a performance silver bullet. Writing optimized CSS overall is best. So there you go. You can turn back your headphones on, but they can't hear us say that. So anyway, that's Kimberly Blessing's research. Cool. All credit to her. So it doesn't matter. Just focus on writing the best CSS you can write.
That's fantastic. What a great idea for a talk. Focus on something that everybody needs to know. Do the research. Present the research. Have a conclusion.
When I first heard this, I was just like, no way. Like thorough as all get out. It was, oh man, they tested Microsoft.com. Hey, website I made. Oh no. All right. Ruh-roh. Okay. Anyway, it's just interesting. And then it varies across browsers too. So even if you nailed it in one browser, it'd be wrong in the other one. So yikes.
All right, we have a sponsor for you. Last week we gave you the one time only first and last discount they ever offered on 1 month iOS.com. This is the same company that makes 1 month Rails.com, 30 minutes a day for 30 days, and you will learn to make an app. Basically, you build like a Pinterest clone, which it's not about building Pinterest. It's about that there you touch on so many things when you're building for something like that. But you build it in Rails. You build it in Ruby and Rails. Thus, you're learning HTML, CSS. You're going to use Bootstrap to get the styles looking. Nice looking site right off the bat. You're going to use Git through GitHub. You're going to learn to use the command line to do all that stuff. It's going to have a database. It's going to host the assets on S3. It's going to be all the stuff that like... This is, if you know all that stuff, you can work on CodePen with us because we use all that stuff. Pretty interesting, right? I like the idea that you can just power through building an app like that. And once you've built something real, that's what you need. I've always been a fan of like you need stakes. You know, you need to be building a thing, and then everything else that you learn kind of clicks around it. Everything else will make sense once you have this foundation. So you get one-on-one support, you know. If you get stuck, there's always someone there to help you while you learn. Like, and so they say, yes, like a real person. Pretty cool. Over 15,000 people have done this. They do one-month HTML, too. This is not their first go-around. It's onemonth.com/shoptalk. So enrollment's typically $99. It's a very affordable thing to do as well. No wonder 15,000 people have done it, been successful at learning and baking a Rails app. 25% off if you go to onemonth.com/shoptalk. 30 minutes, 30 days, 1 month Rails. Thanks for sponsoring. What do we got? We got Tim Chase writing in about something.
Tim writes it. Is there a way to use pure CSS, i.e. no JavaScript, to modify properties of a whole table column without marking up each individual cell? Particularly things like highlighting the column on hover, I turned him into like a Californian Valley girl. Like one can do for a row using TD hover or whatever.
TR hover for a row.
Or setting the display property of a whole column. Basically, he wants to highlight a column.
There is a way to do it. Is there a way to do it? I think there is. Anyway, it's weird, right? There's a lot of things about tables that are weird. This is one of the many weird things. There's an element called call and call group. And they don't, you can't wrap a column in a table, right? You can wrap a row because it's, you know, it's left to right. It's like cell, 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 cell. And all those can go in a TR attribute. But just because they're already in a TR, then you can't wrap just the cells that are in a column. It just can't work. It's like got to be one or the other. But HTML invented a way to kind of group them anyway, even though they're not nested within each other in the HTML. If there is, for example, five cells across in this table, you put five call elements right at the top of the table element. And those, you know, it just is smart enough to realize that those elements refer to all of the first cell in each row. It's really weird, but at least then you can apply styling to them. And I think, I don't know how the hovering works, though. I'm not sure if that's possible. I think that it might be. If you go call hover in CSS, God, I could make a code pen in 2 seconds, but I don't want to like get too distracted here. You certainly can apply CSS styling to the call element, and then that kind of like cascades through the column, I think. So that's a thing. Otherwise, this is like a one-liner in jQuery too. You can be like, you know, on cell hovered, then move up the parent tree two places, right? Move up to its table row, and then move up to the table body ahead of that. Then find all rows. Then find, you know, the same position of what cell you're in. It's index, yeah. Right? And then find that same index in each row and then apply a class to it. And then just remove that class.
And child would help too,
yeah,
there.
Or just use index again or EQ or whatever. It's fairly easy to do in JavaScript. Can you do it in straight HTML? Maybe. I don't know if the call, if call hover is legit in CSS. That's the big question. Or maybe instead of jQuery and doing all this indices stuff, that you could apply a class name to the matching call element so you don't have quite as much DOM traversal. And then if the call element has a class on it, that will take charge of styling the row. That might be a little more performant. Anyway, it deserves a code pen. But there, at least you should know about the fact that there's an HTML element that references columns or groups of columns, like a call group.
Yeah. I tried to code pen it up real quick, and I couldn't do it.
Because what do you hover? Do you hover I guess you have to hover call, but you're not really hovering over the call, or are you? You know? Ugh.
Yeah. Not really, because it's like a ghost element. It's just an instructional element.
I was thinking of how, like, tfoot works, too, and those elements that you can, like even though you're supposed to put tfoot at the top of the table, it actually renders at the bottom of the table. It's like a really weird thing, which can be exploited for RWD purposes.
I'm going to try something.
You're going to do it.
TD, nth of type. Oh, crap. You can't do that. Anyway, because you can't get the index. Oh, well. You could use like data attributes maybe or something like that and select all data attributes.
I've definitely done this on CSS Tricks before. Here's a post, table, row, and column. I'm sure I used jQuery because it was like that was where my mind was at the time.
Why not?
But I bet I covered it in the post as like, well, if you can or can't do it in CSS.
Looks good. Yeah. Go to CSS Tricks, row and column. Yeah, it's literally one line of jQuery.
Yeah, you can get real efficient with it, certainly.
Yeah, cool.
Awesome. All right. Good luck, Tim, there. You know, JavaScript will save you. CSS will not. Angie C writes in, I thought this would be a little opportunity for us to go off on something slightly personal. She wants to know, and we've been asked this before, and I think a rapid fire is the only appropriate place to do it. Probably, what other podcasts do you listen to? Maybe we could not dwell on it forever. Maybe we could both pick two or something that are ones that we've been listening to.
Oh, man. Okay. So,
Can I do
four or five? Okay. Can I do 500? So my top podcast, Responsive Web Design Podcast with Karen McGrain and Nathan Marcotte.
It's been really good. It has a very interesting perspective on it. They find the person who was like in charge of the project to talk about it. So it's
of like a mega project, you know, like Capital One Bank or something. So that's super cool. Code Pen Radio, Chris, you're on that one. It's the story of a product coming to life. It's really good. 99% Invisible is good. It's about design, but in ways that you don't think about design. Like how do you design signs for radioactive material that have to live for 10,000 years past humanity's extinction?
Oh, yeah, that one was good. There's like a whole group that does that. Yeah. It's a good show.
It's just
interesting. And he's got his whole, but he's trying to make a whole network of shows, you know? I haven't listened to the rest of
those. Radio
Topia. Yeah, that's right. It's the same kind of thing with, I don't know, there's a bunch of ones like that. Like, what's the, I'll forget. You keep going.
Oh, that's a good one. And he does. He brings in, like, sister shows into that show. History of Rome, I got turned on to. Are you familiar with this one?
Show?
It's this guy. It's over now. But it's a 173 episode arc where he starts at year zero where like Romulus finds Rome.
My gosh.
And like kidnaps a bunch of criminals and steals, I don't know, women from another town. It's obviously that's not appropriate, but it's just the like historical kind of perspective of all of Rome. It's so cool. It's like it's candy because you're in a car and you're just like, Rome is so weird, but also relevant to our current democracy. Oh my God. This is great.
2000 ratings. Oh, I've never heard of it. That's cool.
Somebody just mentioned it. Page Break with Nikki Brown and Liz Andrade. Still one of my favorites. It's like one of my favorite formulas for a podcast. They take a reading every week or ish and they just a little blog post and they do a little 7-minute episode. And then, they'll take once a month, they read a book and they do like a 30-minute, 1-hour episode where they talk about a whole book. That's super cool.
We've had them on before, you know.
And then I just got into Serial, Chris.
Did you do it? Oh, good.
This is Serial. You guys have heard about it. It's super hipster. It's awesome. It is better than TV. Oh my goodness.
I read like a scathing review of it that way. Like what are the moral implications? You know, like it's such a big thing now that there's like 50 think pieces a day on Serial, you know?
Yeah. Like Serial's this American Life spinoff, right? In that, this woman basically got super interested in investigating this murder, where this guy went to jail for a life sentence, but he was convicted on very like weak terms, just like he smokes pot and dates girls and he's tells everyone he's a Muslim and so therefore he's a liar and therefore he murdered somebody, you know? And it's like, that's like the foundation of the...
Yeah, it's weird. He was convicted basically on cell phone records because there's no murder weapon. There isn't even any really particularly good motivation, really. The only thing is that they dated and then they're not anymore, but nobody said he was particularly broken up by it. Like 100% of people
we're just like, yeah, he's cool with it. But like, so anyway, no spoilers or anything, because I'm only like on episode 3. But it's like, it's
because
so
you go
good.
Back and forth, because there's definitely moments like even now, I think where we're at in the show, it's like you could easily be of the persuasion that Adnan did it.
That's what
makes it so fascinating. I've even started listening to the Slate. The Slate does a podcast right after Serial where they talk about Serial, which I think is kind of sweet.
Does somebody do a podcast right after Shop Talk?
Free idea.
We're not there yet.
Yeah, but I've certainly been enjoying it. That's good. It, you know, it's also good as speaking of like kind of spinoffs is I really like Planet Money, and Alex Bloomberg from Planet Money spun off a show called Startup, which he basically copied our idea at Code Pen Radio, where we not really, but we just talk about he's trying to start up his own podcast company, and this is the first podcast in that podcast company where he talks about starting a podcast company. So it sounds like obnoxiously meta, but because he's such a talented podcaster and like basically radio person, he knows how to kill it with the show. It's like extremely good. Like he gets all this good tape, you know, like he wakes up in the middle of the night because he's uncertain about something, or he thinks of a new name for his company, and he'll turn on the recorder and get it and then like weave it into the show. You know, it's like, we can't do that. You know, like we just hit record and publish it. You know, this is like, he's got it all. Startup is extremely good. Show.
I'm downloading it.
Lots of interviews and stuff. Imagine what if we had all day long, me and you, to work on Shop Talk Show? That's all we did. No job, no other responsibilities, just Shop Talk. We could do epic shows, couldn't we? We could interview 10 people per show and edit them all together nicely. And
I'd have cool background music. Like,
absolutely. There'd be like little drum breaks and stuff. But no, you know, not that this isn't worth listening to, but it's a whole different world. And that's what this is. I'm just an NPR junkie. I listen to all that stuff, Fresh Air and Snap Judgment and, you know, Wait, Don't Tell Me or whatever, which we're totally going to steal one of these days. That was Dave's idea.
Oh, yeah.
I do really like Planet Money and, of course, This American Life. And The Moth is good, too. They tell stories on that. Radio Lab. I'm like a card-carrying Radio Lab member.
Oh, yeah.
I like Security Now because I like listening to Steve Gibson's voice just drill on about stuff. What were you going to?
Well, I was going to say Radio Lab's cool, but I it frustrates me. I don't ever know if it's going to be a 3-minute episode or 1 hour, 60, 90-minute episode.
It's rare that you get a long one these days.
Yeah, but it always just like, it's just heart-wrenching for me to be like, oh, wait, this one's like an hour? God, what am I doing? Anyway, Bizcraft with Gene Crawford and Carl the Jellyfish King Smith.
JavaScript Forever, The Web Ahead,
Freakonomics.
Love
I'm
Freakonomics. That was great. I got to listen to did you listen to the one about Teslas in Norway? I listened to it while in Norway. That's pretty cool.
Oh my God. Yeah. And like they give them subsidies to have these cars because they have all this hydroelectric power. And
yeah. And they like get to the bottom of it. Stuff You Should Know is good. Gosh. Pop Culture Happy Hour. I get all kinds of ones in
2-minute Warning with Paul Russo is a big one.
Huge. That was great.
It's basically Serial. It's like
there was a Planet Money a while ago called When Women Stopped Coding. That's fascinating. That's very relevant to this audience too. Check out that one on Planet Money.
Oh,
they really like figure out like the year that it dropped off and why, and that's fascinating.
Oh yeah, I heard they did an NPR version of that, right?
Well, Planet Money's
is
on
that
NPR.
The same episode. Okay, well, it was like, that was one episode or whatever. And it's like, oh, it's so interesting. And it's like due to marketing, right? Like, because computers were marketed to boys at one point, like literally boys, like young boys, and as like a college prep tool. And so it's like the reason we don't have women in tech is in partly because of marketing. And it's like, gosh, marketing totally messed up the whole world.
And it was. That was the deal. That they
darkness of marketing.
I mean, not to ruin it too badly, but they.
I spoiled
it. Yeah,
so.
I mean, they figured out that the computers were so aggressively marketed towards boys. And then if you had a computer, it was kind of like a secret prerequisite to doing well in computing classes in college that were just kind of getting going in college at that time, which really makes sense.
And then you get a job and then you're in charge of, like, the waterfall kind of starts. Yeah. Like, you're in charge of hiring and then you're in charge, you know, and like. And maybe you're a total scumbag and you totally alienate women. And anyway, so it's just this like cascade, And like, for me, whenever I think of like a video game poster or like a cool guy using an old computer poster, it's always some kid with a pink Walkman and feathered frosted hair, you know, like it's always some boy, like all the computer ads are always boys to me. Or even that show, War Games, right? Would you like to play a game? You know, it's all about Matthew Broderick being an elite boy hacker. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Ferris Bueller goes from that to like hacking the government. How?
We'll do it again. Next time we'll talk really about fast food restaurants we enjoy. Angie has another question about open source that we'll save for another one, too. Just so we can move on to, let's see, how much time do we have left?
Oh, we should probably wrap it up here. I got dinner cooking. So you want to do one more? Let's do one more.
Recording this? Yeah, let's do a quick one.
Are you recording?
I am.
Okay, good. Here we go. Angus Tate writes in, I manage a few WordPress blogs and use WordFence security to track unauthorized login attempts for each site. This connects to that kind of other question, huh? One of the sites I manage is quite large with more than 100 posts and a few thousand page visits a week. Another one of them is quite small with far fewer and only a handful of pages. To date, the largest site has never been attacked with an automated login attempt. On the other hand, the small one gets attacked almost every week. Why are some sites targeted by hackers more than others, especially automated attacks? Do websites end up on target lists or are they just random attacks?
I don't know that we can answer. I mean, neither of us are super security experts or anything. Why do some sites get attacked and others don't? Who knows, you know? It sounds like that all you're getting is login attempts, and I bet pretty much every WordPress site on the whole world gets automated login attempt attacks.
We get a new user registration every few weeks on Shop Talk.
Do we? We should just turn off registration. It's funny then.
Maybe we did it here, but like I have like dead dormant blogs that like totally just get new users.
Yeah, in fact, it was so bad on CSS Tricks at one point because I have open registration because I have to because it's used. It's actually a feature that is used on CSS Tricks that there was like, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of spam accounts in there. Pretty nasty. Yeah. I had to get some custom database work done to clean that up. But if you just don't have registrations on, not too big of a problem. Hopefully you're not hit too hard with that. And if you have a very secure admin password, I would not worry about getting brute forced on your login attempt there. I just don't think it's that big of a deal. You know, you're probably getting hit in all your site's probably getting probed just constantly for weird stuff. I mean, there is just rovers out on the. It's kind of a fun thing to picture, actually. Like there's little bots that just are nefariously traversing the internet trying to find exploits forever, and it's nothing personal against you. It's just bad people trying to find holes.
Yeah, I mean, it could be that you're on some like spider list, you know. But I've also heard like people just search your HTML meta, you know, and sometimes there's like a generator tag that WordPress used to do that was like generator WordPress 2.4 or something.
And sure, like, it certainly doesn't hurt to not have that in there because then their bot will fail and it will move on. You know, it's not say it's security by obscurity is like light security, but you know.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's just kind of like. You got to be careful there because, like, not only are you telling them what platform you're on, you're telling them the vector to which they should attack.
Right. It even used to have the version number up in there.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think it's all kind of better now, but you know, you kind of have to maybe compare your metadata and see what's different. So that's what I would do.
All right. We did it.
We did it. Yay. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We really appreciate you coming out, downloading this episode. I'm hoping my voice will be better by the next episode. But you guys are great. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. Download, rate us up in your podcatcher of choice. And be sure to buy our products. Buy my product. Definitely. Chris, you got anything
else? We actually moved the store on Chop Talk Show to a, you won't even notice it's powered by, it's just, you never leave shoptalkshow.com now. I'm using WP e-commerce to sell the shirts in there now, just because I wanted to bring it into WordPress land and have some more experience with that and for business reasons to kind of separate the store for, I'm trying to be all grown up about stuff lately. It's rough, but. Had to be done.
Growing up.
So we're kind of separating the accounting of Shop Talk Show into its own little world, which included messing with the t-shirt store. But here's the deal. Nothing changes. You want a Shop Talk Show t-shirt? Which, of course, you do because they're super soft and nice. Go buy one and we'll ship one to you. They're for sale at all times at shoptalkshow.com/store.
Awesome. All right. Thanks you, everybody. And Chris... I just noticed, totally, I just was like, I went to Shop Talk to look at the store, and I went to the Marcy Sutton episode, and I noticed, like, Steve Faulkner, HTML5 accessibility dude, he, like, link-bombed our whole comment thread, so it's, like, awesome. It's great.
We should
it's
set
helpful.
That up so you get awesome. Notifications. So you not get notifications yet?
I don't get notifications. I'm lazy. I probably could do it myself, but anyway, we'll figure it out. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Chris. Farewell, people.
ShopTalkShow.com.